It's Saturday, October 15th, 2011. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio. In the first half of Geek Speak, we will cover geek news along with the pledge drive. And in the second half of the show, I will take your calls and comments. It's time now for Geek Speak.
When I find my coat in times of trouble, friends and colleagues come to me, speaking words of wisdom, right as he. As the deadline fast approaches, and bugs are all I can see, somewhere someone whispers, right as he. Right as right in sea, right in sea. Lisp is dead and buried, right in sea. I used to write a lot of Fortran, science it quite flawlessly. I try using it for graphics, right in sea. If you just spent nearly 30 hours debugging some assembly, soon you'll be glad to write and see. Write and see. Write and see. Write and see. Yeah, write and see. Only wins is basic. Write and see. 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 Pascal won't quite cut it, so write and see.
When we in the computer industry speak of standing on the shoulders of giants, Dennis Ritchie stood taller than just about anyone else. He created the C language, the first viable alternative to the quirky and hard-to-debug assembly language and forebear of many popular languages today. He co-created Unix, the basic foundation of many modern operating systems today like Apple's OS X and iOS, and also the internet, both at its inception and very much still today. He will be sorely missed. In remembrance of Dr. Dennis Ritchie. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. And as I said in the second half of the show, we'll be inviting you to join us via phone with questions and comments on technology. I will give you out the phone numbers at the middle of the hour. I am joined in the air room by Terry Green, station manager of KUSP.
It's concerning me that my role at GeekSpeak appears to be the undertaker of tech, because I've been on the show for two consecutive weeks, which is highly unusual. And at the top of both shows, we've talked about the passing of one of the real giants in technology in our time.
Yeah.
What does this mean, Miles? Is this why you invite me on the program to deal with the immortals and their passing from this mortal coil?
Well, you found me out. I'm sorry. And in all honesty, as much as like we mourn the passing of Steve Jobs last week, I do have to say, with regard to the computer industry, the passing of Dennis Ritchie, his contributions to be completely honest, far eclipse what Steve Jobs has accomplished.
That's absolutely true.
And I don't want to diminish Steve Jobs' influence on the tech industry. Right. I just mean that Dennis Ritchie's contribution was so vast.
His work lives on in and you said it at the top of the show. There are so many places in which, you know, the people who make the languages and improve on the languages that underlie all the code that runs on all the gadgets, you know, he is at the center of so much of that.
Mm-hmm.
For so long, too. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure many people, I know some people may have heard of C, but I know a lot of people out there, even if you're not programmers, will have heard of Java, that the syntax was taken from C.
Exactly.
When you talk about things like JavaScript, in other words, when you start making little widgets on a web page.
Anything that moves around on a web page or acts in response to something you do.
Or tells you that, your form, your name isn't spelled right on the form.
Right. More often than not, that's Java doing that thing.
Mm-hmm. And when you are talking to a website, when you're in your web browser going to some server, like going to Google or going to some other site like that, or going to Amazon.
Going to KUSP.org.
Going to KUSP.org. You are touching an operating system that was co-written by this man.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
This is as good a reason as any to have a show like Geek Speak, because this is a hard story to explain in other, and compare what the news was last week after Steve Jobs' passing and how much mainstream media attention that passing absorbed, in the days following that. And yet, as you said, Miles, I think that Dennis Ritchie's impact on technology, the breadth of its impact, maybe not the depth of it. I mean, when you think of it in capitalistic and in economic terms, but when you look at it, as the toolkit, as the technology itself, and how it changes the world, which is kind of what we're about, on this show. This guy's, it would be hard to imagine somebody whose great, whose impact has touched more different places in, how we make technology work for us now.
Hear, hear. Unfortunately, the Air Force isn't as good at managing that technology that is the legacy of.
Let's talk about the branch of government that is ostensibly, directly responsible for cyberspace defense in these United States.
Oh, that would be the Air Force.
It would be the Air Force.
And which I guess makes sense. They are probably the most technical branch of the armed forces. At the same time, we covered on the show that one of the drones had a piece of spyware on it, a keylogger.
Specifically, the technology, the system that controls the drones that fly in Pakistan and Afghanistan and, we don't know where all else, Yemen. There's a system that controls the drones. It's controlled from Nevada, and this system has a virus.
Yeah. And if you thought that the story was over, it was bad, we harped on them before, it got worse, because apparently the folks who were in charge of this program learned about it from the news. In other words, they didn't learn it from the people that were working on it. They didn't learn through the chain of command. They learned through a news outlet that this was happening.
And how do we know this?
This is actually from an article from Ars Technica, which I will be posting up on the website after the show.
Good.
And so it does call into question, but it also brought up an issue, which is each of the branches of the armed forces has their own network.
Right.
In other words, there is no common military network, even though they all have the .mil domain.
Right. But if you're someone who occasionally has to use, resources that are in the .mil domain, you'll notice that it's always army.mil or navy.mil or af.mil.
Right.
And this is why, because each branch of the service controls its stuff.
Right. But even within the branch, even within the Air Force, which I want to bring up again, is in charge of cybersecurity for the United States, there is no central hub for the for the Air Force. There is no place where in the headquarters where someone, a high-up general, can request a network topology or a network dump of what type of traffic is going through the Air Force network, because it is so vast and there is no central authority on it. And this is actually how this got on, because the virus for Keylogger was actually locally built. It was a domestic virus.
Oh, dear gosh.
From what I understand. And it's kind of this one hand doesn't know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing.
Do we have any sense of how, you know, the complexity of the Air Force's IT infrastructure would compare to, a Fortune 10 company or another branch of government? I guess I'm trying to get around the idea of, in the most hierarchical of all institutions, which is the military, how you could just sort of resign yourself to the fact that you have no central oversight and control. That just feels so utterly wrong to me, as an observer. But
yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. If I were to throw out something, I would say that IBM has a bigger network than the Air Force. Mm-hmm. But would be one of the few.
Right, in relative scale. I mean, IBM or another really large, supplier of services, like SAS or somebody like that.
Right, but the DoD in general is a massive technical infrastructure, which is one of the hard parts in trying to secure it, is the fact that it is so massive and...
And yet you would think that you wouldn't be fighting, the battle that those of us in civilian life who kind of oversee IT, which is, one of the things I do here on a super small scale at the radio station, is you're always trying to balance, the resources that you devote to security and to, the reliability of your IT stuff, against the resources that you have. And, you're always balancing competing resources. It would seem to me, and not being a military person, that if I was an IT guy, in the Air Force, I would have a much easier time making the argument of the importance of security and reliability of the network, than I would if I had, the same job at KUSP.
Right.
If KUSP got hacked, the
stream goes down.
not the drone.
Right.
So where do we think the story goes from here? I mean, Daryl Issa, who's the head of the House Investigations Committee, and a person who in a very weird sort of way made his bones in the tech sector, admittedly making car alarms. Would this not be a subject of some interest to the House that the Air Force can't manage its?
I would think so, but then again, so were the bank bailouts, and no one is in jail
touché
for that, or the like. Not to call me a pessimist or a cynic, but
I wouldn't dream of that.
And with that story, I think I would like to bring it up on a leave it on a high note, and
great.
I wanted to bring up a little geek bit here.
Let's,
which is. Did you know, audience out there, that the element bismuth, you can look it up on your periodic table that I know all of you have posted in your house somewhere.
Is there an app for that?
Yes, there is. There are several, actually.
I would think so.
Some very good ones, actually.
Good.
Bismuth, or radioactive bismuth, has a half-life longer than the age of the universe. Half-life being that when you have radioactive decay and one element converts to another...
Mm-hmm.
For example, you would have like plutonium decaying to uranium and other products, that type of thing. Bismuth would take longer than a billion times the age of the universe to hit a single half-life.
Wow.
Which also means that radioactive bismuth is extremely safe to hold in your hand.
if you've got to have something radioactive around the house, perhaps bismuth would be your pick.
Right. The longer the half-life, the safer it might be. But a billion times
the life of the universe?
Yes.
These are the things you learn on this fine radio program.
And we would like KUSP to last just as long. We hope our half-life is just as long, and we will leave you with this message.
You can pledge support to KUSP by calling 888-777-1507 or by going online to kusp.org. We want to thank Hans in Santa Cruz for doing so, Adam in Salinas, Jane in Watsonville, and Joe in Royal Oaks for pledging support to KUSP earlier today. Lola, do you have some thank yous as well?
I do. Helen in Scotts Valley, Anne in Pacific Grove, and Vivian in Santa Cruz. Thank you so much, all of you, for calling in this morning and pledging your support to KUSP.
And we can join them at 888-777-1507, KUSP.org. I'm Sean Ramsfirm for KUSP. This is Lola Bryce with me here in the studio. And we're coming to you on the final day of KUSP's fall fundraising drive, the final day and the final hours. This puppy's over at 1 o'clock this afternoon, so your calls and clicks of support now are most valuable to us.
1 p.m., that's the deadline. We're only here till 1. We would like to hear from you. We need to hear from you. You're listening to Geek Speak this morning. You probably listen every Saturday. And we would like you to call in and support KUSP for the service of hearing Geek Speak. And you rely on this new service all week long. And we only have a few hours left in the drive. We would like to make $2,500 coming up in this next 40 minutes before Geek Speak ends. We're looking to you. We need to hear from you. $2,500 by the end of the hour. And you can do that by calling 888-777-1507. Or you can go online, geek that you are, click KUSP.org. And it's all laid out for you. It's really easy. 2 minutes of your time. And you can help us reach our goal by the end of the hour, $2,500.
And if you need any more numbers, here's one more. 50% or more, actually, of our budget here at KUSP comes from you, our faithful and loyal listeners. And as we face uncertainty over the future of federal funding here in public radio, your contribution will secure a bright future for this station. So your donation to KUSP is going a long way at the station, and it's more important than ever. 888-777-1507. KUSP.org.
I'm Robert Siegel, host of NPR's All Things Considered. At the moment, there is so much talk, there is so much argument passing for discourse that we now speak of fact-based journalism to mean what we used to call journalism. NPR is journalism. At its heart, there are reporters doing reporting, and there are hosts like me trying to put sometimes impertinent questions to the kinds of people our reporters are reporting about. But it's not a food fight. It's not an attempt to simply attract listeners by going over the top and saying the most excessive thing that we possibly can. That is what today characterizes. NPR is different.
You're out there, you're listening. You're listening to us and NPR every week. We can hear you calling in. We have a team of volunteers, very friendly volunteers, waiting to hear from you. And some of them are geeks, in fact. And we can hear you calling in. We need more people to call in. We would like you to consider giving a gift of $60 today. $60 will help KUSP continue to bring you the programming that you love, continue to bring you Geek Speak, and we can continue to bring you all of the NPR programming that you enjoy. So you can do that by calling 888-777-1507. Go online, KUSP.org.
Again, getting back to the geekiness in just a moment here, just a little more pledginess for a second. We do have a lot of local programming here at KUSP. It's a lot easier to just go with national syndicated programming. It's cheaper. You certainly don't need any people here in the station. You don't need to have as many lights on. But we go that extra mile to bring you local content, Geek Speak, produced in this station every weekend. Ask Dr. Don as well, and a number of shows coming to you today. We have 2.5 hours left to go, 2.5 hours left to go in this pledge drive, and you can be the next caller or the next pledger to get us closer to a successful end to the drive. 888-777-1507, KUSP.org. Back to the geeks.
Thank you, thanks. Sean. Thank you, Lola.
And the very nice host of Geek Speak as well wants to also bring up, in a trailing on that Air Force news story, we've talked about security on Geek Speak a lot. Mm-hmm. It actually is on a lot of people's minds.
We
constantly get calls in from people saying, how do I make my system secure? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we don't have a silver bullet for you. And we do have to say, in everyone's defense, it's not because someone's trying to be malicious or is totally, you know, incompetent. It's along the lines of security is the exact opposite of accessibility. If you want something to be accessible, you know, you want to be able to talk to that drone, but you also don't want the communication lines to be muddled. You don't you want to be able to get to that website, but you don't want the site to be taken down.
The most secured computer in my house is my Commodore 64 that has been in its cardboard box for the last 7 or 8 years. I have absolute confidence that that computer is secure because it doesn't communicate with anything.
Right. And I don't want to alarm anyone. It's kind of like talking about cars. It's like there is no car that's 100% secure, but you can get some that are safer than others. Mm-hmm. However, I do have to call to task Sony. Sony, Sony, Sony. The PlayStation Network got hacked.
Again?
Again.
Oh, my goodness.
93,000 accounts compromised. So and when I say 93,000 accounts, people, when they're on the PlayStation Network, this is a pay-for service, mm-hmm. so that's right. credit card numbers and personal information right. and the like.
And we think that it was just as, you know, comprehensive of a hack as the one before, and the one before, and the one before in terms of exposing personal information.
Amount, the amounts, I think, this is smaller right. than some of the
okay, good.
Previous hacks. Yes. I think they caught it
incremental progress at Sony.
Right, but
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't want to diminish that this type of thing is, not. I have a harder time defending this type of
it's
problem.
It's very challenging to do that.
Yeah. On the other side, I do have to say that if you have security, like for KOSP, as far as I know, no one's targeting us, and I hope no one will. But when you have companies like Sony and the PlayStation Network, you're going to have people that aren't just doing a general exploit. They're targeting specifically the Sony PlayStation Network. So
exactly.
that's one side of that coin. However, it's been a few times
now. It's a pretty evident, you know, target of malice. Which might be a name of a game on, you know, PlayStation Network. Somebody Target of Malice. I don't think I've seen that one yet. But we digress. So what's Sony going to do? I mean, the same thing they've been doing up to this point without notable enduring success.
Don't know, but they do have an official blog.
Okay.
Where their chief information security officer and senior VP. Has been writing on this blog. So if you want to keep up some information to find out like how much information is down or if you want to see like what the status is or what measures they're taking, that would be the place to go, and we'll have that link up on geekspeak.org after the show.
Is there any way, do we know anything about what characterizes the, you know, apparently 93,000 accounts that were compromised this time? I mean, is it, you know, limited by geography or... Or it just could be any random, you know, registered PlayStation Network user.
I don't know. I don't have that information handy. They did shut things down before they saw any actual activity on those accounts. So people weren't like illicitly
purchasing
stuff.
That, you know, things were being purchased in their name. And
right. Oh, I'm sorry. And I misspoke. The company claims credit card information was not at risk.
Oh, good. So that's a step in the right direction.
That's a step in the right direction. That is better. I am sorry for that previous statement that credit cards were involved. They, in fact, are not, according to Sony, with this recent release.
All right. Our apologies to all the Sony folks who listen to the program. And hearing Geek Speak beat up on them low these many months.
Well, you still got hacked again.
It did get hacked again.
But, yeah, it's not as bad as it has been previously. So, yes, incremental improvements.
Okay. We strive for that in so many things in life.
Yeah. At the same time, it wasn't really, you know, Sony's intention to have this happen. This happened to them. They are not the bad actors.
No.
Which is unlike what an Austrian civil liberties group is saying about Facebook.
Ah.
Where Facebook has been making the statement that releasing your personal data is not required. Like, you can say, like, hey, I want those pictures back, or I want this stuff that I wrote down, or what is, you know, what types of likes were put on. They can say no, according to their terms of service, because they can say this will adversely affect our trade secrets or our status of our trade secrets or intellectual property.
Okay, let me back this up a minute. So if I, at some point, were a Facebook user. I put some content, you know, into Facebook's ecosystem.
Right. You upload a note from your cell phone.
Whatever. And I later decided that, you know, I want to leave. You know, I no longer want this to be, you know, part of that environment. And Facebook's argument is now that they can't accommodate that request because it would adversely affect their trade secret?
No, I think that is a different thing.
Okay.
Because that is actually the policy of most companies that that's a data retention issue. That right. If you want to close the account, that that information doesn't just go away.
Right.
This is more along the lines of even data that is up there, if you wanted to grab it and move it someplace else or collate it, they could possibly say no.
Oh.
Even if you have a live account at the time. And so this has been a real big problem, especially in Europe, because Europe has so much more stringent privacy laws.
Right,
than
as
the
I was
US
about
does.
To say, no wonder this emerged in, you know, in an EU country, because clearly they're statutes that protect, you know, individuals, you know, control over their information,
right.
You know, are so much more comprehensive than they are in
right, but it's not just
States.
People who have accounts.
Right. Okay.
And I actually noticed this. This is why I got onto Facebook. Right. I resisted for a very long time.
Famously.
Yes. But at the same time, Facebook will collate information that my friends put up about me, whether they tag that information of me, they'll submit, you know, like information about me, and then Facebook will collate that and make almost like a placeholder account for me.
Oh.
And that's what I found, actually, was I started getting emails based upon this because other people had put in my email address saying, hey, is this person on here? No, he's not on there. Invite him to Facebook. And then they put in my name and they put in my contact info, and suddenly I'm like, well, I guess I better make an account now because it makes no difference whether I have
achieved nothing in protecting my own information by opting out of this world.
Right.
Wow. That's different.
And anything you put up there, let's say someone puts an abusive message up onto your page, onto your wall.
Right.
If you delete that message, it's actually not deleted from their servers. It's merely toggled
off. Not visible.
Off. Right. It's merely toggled off. It's still in the database.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no intentions of trying to selectively delete that information. It may still be useful or lucrative in some way.
I shudder to think how, you know, the algorithms that you know, aggregate all this information and sift it out and sort it in different places. You know, if the fact that, you know, you identify something as offensive or harmful, how that figures into the algorithm. Someone who does this often, are they just, you know, is there some kind of sort to the, you know, the easily offended and the high profile targets?
And that is probably
a very good reason
why they want to keep it. Yeah.
Yeah. Good gravy.
Also, if you have a link to a picture, like you post a picture on Facebook. Let's say, I don't know, you had a very raucous night the night before, and a friend of yours takes a photo of you that you would rather not have people see because employers are looking at Facebook profiles now.
Yes.
And then you go up and you're like, oh, no, take that down. You can, you know, untag yourself and you can delete that photo. Or at least get your friend to delete that photo.
Yeah, you can ask your friend to delete.
As I have
experienced. Thankfully, not in a particularly compromising situation.
Right, you can untag yourself.
But I remember the first time, you know, that I realized how little control I had over what people thought.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, that if there's a link directly to that photo, someone, you know, posted on their blog or something like links to that photo, that picture may still be public on the internet for more than 32 hours.
Even after the person who posted it unposted it.
Yeah, even after the person who posted it thought they deleted it, but they click the X and they go, yeah, are you sure you want to delete this? Yes. That image is still
out there.
Downloadable.
Oh, my.
Many times over a day later. And
I wonder if Facebook sees this as a problem. You too.
You can go through the GeekSpeak. Yeah, you can go through the GeekSpeak archives and check out our opinion of the data privacy issues. Not to say that, you know, social networking is inherently a bad thing. We don't believe that,
It's along the lines of we're hitting new ground. We're hitting different interconnections, different ways that technology is intersecting with our lives that we did not know would be a problem in the past. It's like the founding fathers not knowing how to make laws about the internet. You know, you don't know.
Things change. You know, that's the thing about the human experience is that you learn things as you go along. At least that's what I'm hoping.
Yep. And now let's learn.
with that in mind.
With that in mind, let's learn a little bit about the financial needs of KUSP.
And bring in Sean and Lola.
Our pledge geeks. Here we are, Sean and Lola. And we want to tell you about our goal for this station. It's to raise $20,700 by 1 o'clock. And we're going to do it one pledge at a time here at KUSP, 888-777-1507, KUSP.org. We heard from Ken after the last break. Ken and Ben Lohman, thank you so much for your pledge. He called in. You can call in. This is Geek Speak. If you want to go online and just click away over there, open a new tab in your Chrome or your Firefox, do so. But please do it now because next week it's a pledge-free Geek Speak. So we're waiting to hear from you today.
The time is now, right now. And it's a fantastic time to contribute. We have a little less than 2.5 hours left to go of our fall drive. We do have, as Sean said, $20,700 left to raise by 1 p.m. And we have faith. We have faith that we can do it. We've done it before. Haven't we?
We will not give up until that 1 o'clock bell. And when we get there, we are hoping that this pledge drive is ending successfully. That's the key word, ending successfully. It's ending either way, but we want it to end successfully. Think about giving $20 a month to KUSP. That goes a long way. It's a $240 yearly gift, but $20 a month, we can take it out just like that. A $20 charge here, $20 charge there, and you're keeping your local community-supported public radio station healthy.
And you can do that by calling 888-777-1507 or online, kusp.org.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers.
Here to remind you that public radio does not exist in a vacuum.
That's good, because if it did, it would be awfully dusty and disgusting in here, don't you think?
That's not what I mean. This station can't exist without listeners like you who listen to our programming and who in turn pledge your support to keep it going.
Right. Without you, this station is just like a 63 Dodge Dart without gas. Or a sail without wind.
And you can take my brother's word for that because he's the family expert on both gas and wind.
Just read your lines, will you?
Don't forget that this is a great station. Keep it great by calling and making your pledge.
And thanks.
And you can do that at 888-777-1507 or go online to kusp.org, Click and Clack. Had the message. You've been listening to the drive all week since last Wednesday. We're on our final hours of the drive. So please, if you've been procrastinating, go ahead, make that call. Go to your computer. The number again, 888-777-1507, kusp.org.
Shall we go back to the geeks?
I think we should.
Let's hear some phones rings. We're going back to the geeks.
And you are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. The geeks today are Terry Green, station manager.
Last geek off the bench.
And I'm your host, Miles Elam. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support for businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. KUSP co-sponsors Flip for Wales, a sunset cruise featuring National Geographic photographer Charles Flip Nicklin. Friday, October 21st from 4 to 7 p.m. Proceeds benefit marine life studies research and education programs for kids. Information is at marinelifestudies.org. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Dr. Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in handcrafted dentistry from start to finish using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. Learn more online at ramirezdds.com. And if you want to call in, phone lines are open. If you want to have a question or comment for the geeks, for Terry or myself, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
And those are the right phone numbers to call if you've got a question about technology. If you've got a question about pledge drives, that's a different number, 888-777-1507. But we do invite your calls about technology in the 18 minutes or so we have left of the show this morning.
Thank you very much for that. And now, moving on to another story while we wait for some calls. Let me make sure that I actually don't have a call right now. I can just do the story. Do the story. So, a California appellate court has ruled that police officers can search your cell phone during a traffic stop.
During a traffic stop?
Yes.
How's that possible?
As this is the facts from the California versus Natoli case.
Okay.
And this person was pulled over for speeding in Santa Cruz County by a deputy sheriff, and he suspected that Natoli was under the influence of drugs. And as his license, this person was license was also expired. And so the sheriff decided to impound the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Natoli requested to leave his car parked on the side of the road. The sheriff refused and started to do an inventory search prior to towing.
Okay.
And that included the cell phone that was in there.
Okay.
And so found some stuff, and I'm not going to get into the details of that. If you want to read more about the story, you can go up to geekbeat.org after the show and read more about it. But it does bring up a very interesting thing, which is many times you have to have, if you're, you need a warrant to get into someone's house, and then you have to have very specific items about where you're going to be searching right. in there.
Search warrants are designed to identify that which is being searched for.
Right.
That's the idea.
And cell phones end up having so much of our personal information, right. so much of our history, like who you've talked to. Mm-hmm. What you've been looking at in terms of the internet now, you know, right. what communication's been going on through email,
right?
What your finances are like,
where you've been. I mean, I have an application on my phone that has that does tracking of trips and things,
right?
So my geographical whereabouts at certain dates and times are on my cell phone,
mm-hmm. and so to have this information, it's kind of like saying yes. As long as they have you on something else, a woman's purse is available to be rifled through. I mean, it's very much the same types of items that you might have, very personal items. So it's a very curious thing, and I have
this
not
read
this.
This is a really remarkable legal area because, physical objects are one thing, but, the sweep of the information that exists, on an individual smartphone is – that seems to me to be, a completely different, kind of thing to be searched.
Right. And we are not lawyers, and I have not even had my layman's attempt at going back through this court case to see what right. were the doctrine there. And if there is a lawyer out there who is more familiar with this case, we would love to hear from you. It's a great topic. But for now, it's just a word of warning
out
there.
A thing to watch out for.
Yeah, you will have to watch out for this, that there may be some unintended consequences once again from our society that we may need to deal with down the road.
Thanks for that story.
And on, a different note, let's talk to Ellen from Salinas. Hello, Ellen. I did not pick up the line. There we go. Ellen from Salinas.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi, I have a question about email accounts.
Go right ahead.
I canceled an internet provider with broadband and went to AT&T UVerse and lost the first email account. I have no access to it. Do they own it?
Yes. The bottom line is yes.
And so I cannot retrieve that at all.
You can ask them, and there are many ISPs that will be more than gracious to give you a quick dump of everything, just like give you a file and send it off, or give you temporary access just so you can download it yourself and then go off. But you would have to ask them. Once you stop paying for the ISP service, you do not have access to their network resources anymore.
All right. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call.
I will say that on the two different occasions in my life where I've changed my kind of core email provider, both of the ISPs, which were both independent, not large, mm-hmm. Goliath organizations, were really great about making sure that I had everything And this is part of why I deal. You know, why I've always tried to use small independent ISPs is because all good things must come to an end, and how nicely you manage that transition has a lot to do with how difficult transitions are.
Right. I've actually had the same thing. I had a Cruise.io account back in the late '90s and or mid '90s, I guess. Right. Okay, I'm getting old. So, I had this email account, and I was leaving Santa Cruz. I'd left and went down to Southern California for a while, and I had this email account, and was thinking, I hate to lose this. I hate to lose this information. This is the way that people know how to contact me, and so I ended up closing the main part of the account and just kept the email address. And many ISPs will do this. For a nominal fee that's much less than what the normal service is, you can keep that email address and have access to it and go back and forth.
Which is a really good transition strategy for people to keep in mind.
Right. When I was paying, $20 a month at the time for 10 megabytes of web space,
Sweet.
And stuff like that. The email address only ended up being 5, that type of thing.
Right.
This was back in the mid-90s, of course, so price.
But the principle's still the same.
You can still do that. Most ISPs that I've come across will allow something like that, and that's a great way around it. And I ended up having that email address for, 10 years after I left Santa Cruz. I think I'd already come back to Santa Cruz, and I finally went, okay,
enough already.
No one's messaging me on this email account anymore. I think I can retire it.
I think my transition when I moved to Santa Cruz was, along those similar lines was about a year and a half. But yeah. How soon they forget. Any more geek news?
I do have a couple other things, but we do have phone lines are open for people to call in. Once again, the phone numbers are 476-2800. Or 1-800-655-5877. Once again, those are the call-in numbers, whereas the pledge numbers are
888-777-1507. And we'll check in with Sean and Lola on the pledge side of the building here in a couple more minutes and see how we're doing towards our fundraising goals for the show. But news.
Yes. One thing that we talked briefly about last week was the introduction of the iPhone 4S.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make this an ad. So I can just say, I don't represent Apple in any way. I'm not giving me kickbacks. And I actually have no intention of getting an iPhone 4S. So just throw that out there. And yet, I did want to talk about the fact that it's now available on Sprint. And it seems like we have this great competition going on there. However, Sprint has a 4G service. You can't get it with the iPhone.
Really?
The iPhone doesn't support it.
How? Well, I am rendered speechless by that development.
Yeah.
This big deal for Sprint in terms of handsets. Doesn't support the network, which has been their big marketing point for months.
On the contrary, they're betting big on the iPhone because they have been hurt a lot in the last four years not having it.
Right.
But at the same time, it seems like they're betting the farm. They're putting in some $20 billion or something huge like that on the line. And they're going to be phasing out their own 4G setup, which was, and now I'm forgetting the name of it. The
Clearwire, was that?
That's the company that does it, but I was thinking of the technology. It's a long-range, high speed, and the name escapes me right now. But and they're dropping that in favor of LTE, which is the technology that Verizon and AT&T are moving toward.
Okay. So what does this mean for Sprint customers pre-iPhone that have high speed?
They're actually still going to be able to use it.
They're
going to be grandfathered in. They're going to keep that service around while those people are still using it. So there's no immediate threat of suddenly my phone doesn't work that I paid for.
It slows down by a factor of 10 or...
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Although I still have some questions about that. We talked about it before on the show. But at the same time, what is up with... These cell phones have caps on them, so the download speed gets faster, but the caps aren't going up. And so it just means
there's a paradox.
That just means that you run out of space for data. Right. You go into the overages faster, rather than you know.
Right. If we're thinking about the customer experience, you know, the customer experience gets both better and worse at the same time.
Right. Latency is still going to be the same. You mm-hmm. still have latency being the delay between when you request some data
right.
and when you get it back.
Mm-hmm.
That remains the same. It's just the download speed. Once you say, I want that YouTube video, and YouTube gets that message and mm-hmm. goes, oh, you want this? Here, start the stream. That's when things get faster.
Yeah.
So it's a curious thing out there that that we have this you know, apparent lack of bandwidth, and yet.
So do we have any sense on how these you know these millions of anticipated you know iPhone Sprint customers are going to get the speed that their you know their iPhone brothers and sisters you know using Verizon or AT&T?
Well, Sprint already has a 3G network.
Yeah, right.
So they're still on there. That would work just fine. But yeah.
But so the fastest connection, how would the fastest you know connection like right now on Sprint compare to the fastest connection on a AT&T iPhone?
I actually don't know right off the top of my head.
Because that would seem to be kind of the relevant, oh, I've got to pick a carrier.
Right,
know,
and we'd be talking
question.
About it in averages.
Yeah,
because
right. The variance
depends upon
is huge.
Which city you're in. Yeah. Chances are, if you're in a big metro mm-hmm. Area, Sprint is doing pretty well. If mm-hmm. you're off the beaten trail a little bit, Sprint kind of falls off
so much.
Mm-hmm. So it really just depends on how you use that phone. And speaking of how you use KUSP.
Right, or your phone, since it is a pledge drive. Let's bring in Sean and Lola for one more pledge update before the end of Geek Speak.
The update is that we need to hear from you at 888-777-1507 or on the web at kusp.org. We came in this morning with like $28,000 left to raise for this pledge drive. We're now under $20,000. That's how this works. You got these daunting goals, but people chime in. People understand how this works, and they call in, they go online, and they pledge. So now we're waiting to hear from the rest of you. Isn't that right, Lola?
We are. We need to hear from the rest of you. And if you have been putting off pledging all week, if you've been listening to the drive and you think, I'm going to get to that, I have a busy week, now is your opportunity. In fact, it may be your last opportunity to give us a call. You might have a busy Saturday ahead of you. You might be waiting for Geek Speak to be over, and then you'll start a full day. So this might be your last opportunity to give us a call or to go online to kusp.org and make your pledge. Consider giving a pledge of $1 a day for a whole year, or something like $30 a month. I think that you should consider that. Whatever's comfortable for you, go online, kusp.org, call 888-777-1507.
That's the number to call, 888-777-1507. Did you do a thank you, Lola?
I don't want to forget to thank Jason in Scotts Valley.
Thank you,
so much for calling in.
And so many members have called in and become new members. Some people have renewed. And we thank all of the people that have done that. Again, this pledge drive is ending this afternoon at 1 o'clock. Few hours remain in the pledge drive, just over two. And so, you know, KUSP isn't going to come to you for 6 months. That's how it works. We come out with this like 10-day opportunity for you to support this station, for you to take a piece of it. And you really don't want to miss it, because your call, your click of support right now keeps this station strong and healthy. So the number is 888-777-1507. The website is kusp.org.
Think about what you've heard this morning on KUSP. Ask Dr. Don. Geek Speak now. Wait, don't tell me coming up. The 7th Avenue Project tomorrow. All of the shows that you enjoy on KUSP are asking for your support now. We're in our final hours. We've got just a little under $20,000 to raise in a little over 2 hours. We need to hear from you. Give us a call, 888-777-1507, kusp.org.
Your calls and clicks right now are votes of support for Geek Speak, of this program that we bring to you every Saturday. And KUSP really does have rich programming all weekend and all week, but especially on the weekends we get diverse with Ask Dr. Don, with Geek Speak, with Soul Shack, with Sweet Power, with Eclectic Sounds. All of it's here on KUSP. We also bring you Car Talk and Wait, Don't Tell Me coming up, of course. Support the kind of programming you can hear only here at KUSP, 888-777-1507, KUSP.org. We're waiting to hear from you and can't wait to thank you. Thank you for supporting KUSP. Now back to the geeks.
Thanks, guys. And we'll take another call. Jackie from San Martin. Hello. Hello?
Hello? Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hi. This is Jackie in San Martin.
Hi.
So I'm sort of a modern technological sort of adult, but who has a daughter at UC Santa Cruz, and she wants to go up to a smartphone from just a regular phone.
Mm-hmm.
And being the sort of frugal, practical sort of person I am, I'm trying to understand what possible advantage there would be to having a smartphone, since she has a high-speed internet connection at home, and then she at where she lives in Santa Cruz, and she has a high-speed internet connection, Wi-Fi, while she's on campus. Of course, that connection cannot be linked into when you're in the classroom, because they don't want people emailing while they're in the classroom. So her excuse is if she wants to look at the professor's website for lecture pages, you know, she can't do that with her laptop and doesn't want to drag the laptop, which I understand, around campus all day. So,
right.
So, but I'm still trying to figure out what the real advantage, not a social advantage, there is to having a smartphone.
As someone who actually did have an iPhone when I was studying at UC Santa Cruz, I can say that I did use it for looking up various bits of data when I didn't catch a term or something struck my mind from the lecture. I was able to look something up. So that was useful. At the same time, a lot of my cohorts in that class were using Facebook. So so I don't want to lie about that one. I mean, a lot of people who had their laptop in were not paying attention.
Well, and I don't mind so much, because that's sort of a choice you make. I just want to know what advantage it gives you, because I'm not so much in trying to prevent the bad stuff as I am trying to figure out, you know, for $30 a month extra, what are we getting?
Yeah, I love having my iPhone, but it's going to also be up to the professor what it does, and it's going to have to do with what your budget's like.
Well,
and how
then,
good you think her self-control is.
And
I think that's the big variable, is discipline.
It occurs to me that if you're really going to be paying for that, shouldn't you have, like, a tablet so that you actually have something more useful than this little, you know, 2-inch by 3-inch screen?
Yeah. We are running out of time, but I would say actually a laptop would be more useful than a tablet. But, yeah. All right. Thank you for the call. Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Once again, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Thank you, everyone, for calling in. If it wasn't for you, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that? And GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org.